This is a WATD Political Forum on 95.9 WATD, online at 95.9WATD.com. Now, live from Studio B, here's your moderator, WATD's Christine James.
And thank you very much. Good evening and welcome to a political forum. It's the candidates for the Plymouth-Norfolk District State Senate seat. The district includes Weymouth, Scituate, Norwell, Marshfield, Hull, Hingham, Duxbury, and Cohasset. Republican incumbent Pat O'Connor is here, facing a challenge from Democrat Meg Wheeler. Thanks for joining us tonight. I'm your moderator, Christine James, along with Monday Night Talk host Kevin Tachi and WATD's Charles Mathewson asking questions. And we also want to thank Marshfield Community Television for being a part of tonight as our media partner. Our format is simple. If you have watched before, we always do the same format. We ask the candidates to have an opening statement prepared, no longer than 2 minutes, and a closing statement of no longer than 1 minute. Reporters will ask a round of questions, and we'll also ask some lightning round questions. And when I say lightning, I mean lightning. It's quick, it's fast. The answers are either yes or no. We find most people that run for office are incapable of doing this, but we still ask them anyway. Yes or no, or one or two sentences tops. You have to get right to the point. And, of course, a closing statement of 1 minute. We have a timer here, and that's our own Amy Leonard. She has these cards. Green is go, red is stop, yellow is 10 seconds. Larry Nelson will be doing engineering. We'd like to thank our sponsor this evening, that's Stewart Painting, encouraging you this fall to take pride in your vote and in your home. Visit stewartpaint.com for special home repair and painting offers and to schedule a free estimate. Now, what we did was we chose the opening and closing order out of the official newsroom koozie stand-in. So it will begin with Patrick O'Connor, then go to Meg Wheeler for opening statements, and we will reverse that order at the end. But we say thank you for joining us, and let's get started now, and let's go to our opening statements. Patrick O'Connor.
Thank you. Thank you to WATD for hosting this political forum tonight. My name is Patrick O'Connor, and I've had the honor to serve as state senator for the Plymouth and Norfolk District for the past 4 years. Working together and believing in bipartisan public policy, we've secured record local aid for public safety, infrastructure, and education. We've built new libraries, bridges, and schools, all right here in the South Shore. And now, together, we face one of our biggest challenges in rebuilding our economy to where it was before COVID-19 and taking care of our neighbors struggling during this pandemic. I seek re-election because I believe my work and the work of my office in the State Senate is just getting started. Every single day I hear from people across the district, and I take their stories, their struggles, and their values with me to Beacon Hill to advocate for a better South Shore and a stronger Commonwealth. We've had great success so far in growing our economy for working families, creating good-paying jobs, bringing taxpayers' dollars back to the district, passing laws to protect our most vulnerable, building homes for homeless veterans right here in Marshfield as well as in Weymouth, investing in our communities, and so much more. This job is about putting people before politics, and it's a responsibility and privilege I take extremely seriously. I look forward to the discussion this evening and respectfully ask for your vote to continue to provide the South Shore with the representation it deserves.
That's the opening comment from Patrick O'Connor. Thank you. Opening comment from Meg Wheeler.
Thank you so much for having me here tonight. So I'm here today because of my mom, a single mother who worked hard as an elementary school teacher so that I could have a better life. As someone who's always valued education, I'm proud to have earned my undergraduate degree in economics and philosophy and an MBA and MS in accounting from Northeastern. I'm proud of my nearly 10 years of experience as a CPA working in public accounting. Today, I'm proud to be a small business owner, providing financial guidance to other small businesses. Hard work has always been a significant part of my life. I started working at the age of 14, earning minimum wage in both restaurants and retail jobs, so I know how important it is to have access to a good job. But I also know what it's like to get sick and have to choose between your health and not being able to pay your bills. I know what it's like to work all through college, yet still be saddled with six figures of student loan debt. And I know what it's like to start a small business with no capital and no savings to fall back on. I also know what it's like to juggle the cost of raising a family, from unaffordable housing to debilitating medical bills to expensive childcare costs. As the mom of a three-year-old, I know what it's like to raise a child in a society that deprioritizes investing in people and prioritizes big breaks for the wealthy and for corporations. And that's why I'm running to be your next state senator because we are facing massive inequality, and I believe that our current state senator is either unwilling or unable to tackle these systemic issues. My financial expertise will be an asset in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic. My personal experiences as a mom and a small business owner will bring a fresh perspective to the issues, and my focus on investing in our people and crafting policies that make your lives better will finally tackle the systemic inequalities that are crushing our working families. When you go to vote on or before November 3rd, ask yourselves this: are we really better off than we were 4 years ago? If the answer is no, I humbly ask for your vote.
Thank you very much. That was the opening statement from Meg Wheeler. Let's go to questions now. Let's begin with Kevin Tanchi, host of Monday Night Talk.
Well, we think about how COVID-19 has kind of taken our focus for most of 2020, but the death of George Floyd also brought our attention full circle in regards to systemic racism and questions here in the Commonwealth regarding law enforcement reforms. I want to get your individual takes on the recent Senate bill that called for changing to local policing and any safeguards that it was going to put in place or any issues that it might cause for those who put their lives first and foremost, whether it's police, firefighters, or hospital workers. We'll start with you, Meg.
Thank you. Let me just start by saying that the death of George Floyd was not the first death of a black person at the hands of police violence. And while I am very glad to see that we're finally addressing these are issues that have been going on for far too long. I am very grateful to the Senate for bringing this police reform bill to the table. And I'm very grateful to every single person who voted for this bill, unlike my opponent. This bill is a good start. It brings important reforms to our policing industry. It bans things like tear gas and chokeholds. It limits qualified immunity. But it doesn't go far enough, and I think we still need more work to do. So when I'm in the state Senate, I look forward to doing that work. I look forward to listening to the concerns of the black communities and really making sure that we put in place proper police reforms that actually start valuing black lives.
So my follow-up question to you is, would you be a proponent of defunding police departments, whether it's within your district or the state, around the state?
Sure. So I think what's really important to acknowledge here is that the role of policing has really changed. And now we expect our police officers to not only enforce our laws, but to also be mental health professionals, to be counselors, and to step in many situations where I don't think that they necessarily are the best person to do so. So what I support is reallocating funds from our police departments to our community programs. I think that we have massive systemic issues, and we need to address those. And the best way to do that is through the programs that our communities have created. I continue to support the police and the important work they do. And for that reason, I want to take this burden of them being mental health professionals off their shoulders and put that important work where it should belong.
Senator, my question to you, you were actually in the Senate. You had a chance to be part of discussing this bill, at least on the Senate side of things. Give your stance on this bill and what you ultimately voted and why.
Yeah, I thought this bill was a huge missed opportunity. I thought the bill was rushed. It divided our state in the end, and it didn't need to happen the way that it did. Being part of those negotiations and conversations really showed the importance of being able to sit at a table like that and actually negotiate some of these things. Instead of doing that, law enforcement was left largely out of the negotiation process, and the process was largely actually driven by the ACLU rather than even the NAACP. And what we had at the end was more of what we didn't need, which was division. And the governor had put forward a bill that would do a lot of comprehensive things, including create the certification process, which was, by definition of page count, the largest part of that bill. I thought we could have gotten that done, the certification component, went back to the table, and got something done where you have reform advocates and law enforcement standing side by side behind the governor, signing something that works, that unites us rather than divides us.
So my follow-up to you is would you ever be a proponent of either defunding or reallocating police department funding, whether it be in your state, whether it be in the state or in your district?
No. I can understand where my opponent's coming from as far as mental health services, but what we need to do is continue to fund them at a larger level. One of the things that I always pinpoint in my mind is when I was a city councilor in Weymouth, and the services that the Weymouth police provided to individuals after they had suffered an overdose and were released from the hospital. This was before our healthcare professionals really caught on to where they needed to be, and law enforcement were the primary people that were dealing with individuals suffering with substance use disorder. They are still the ones that knock on the door offering people after they're released from South Shore Hospital the opportunity for the services and recovery that are available to them, and willing to drive them even to their next stop if they want to start that road to recovery themselves. So no, I believe in increasing funding to a lot of these services that we have right now, but never defunding the police departments.
Okay, Charles Mathewson, questions for the candidates?
Meg, I have never, and I've been doing this a while, I have never seen a page of a candidate's website devoted to nurses. Why did you do that?
Well, it's a great question, and I did it because nurses are a really critical component of our society and our communities. I can still remember when I gave birth to my son, Jack, who's three now, and we had a very harrowing moment where he had to be rushed to the NICU, and we didn't know if he would make it. And it was the nurses who got me through that, and more importantly, got my son through that. I think that nurses are really the unsung heroes in our medical profession, and I think this pandemic that we are living through really shows us that. They're not paid enough, they're not getting enough credit, and they're not getting enough protections. We know that sexual assault and physical assault in hospitals are still a tremendous issue. And so for me, it was just one way to show that protecting our nurses is an important part of my term as state senator, and that they will have a voice at my table, at our table, so that we can truly get reforms for them.
Patrick, haven't you ever been in a hospital? What do you have against nurses?
Well, I'm proud to be endorsed by the Massachusetts Nurses Association, even prouder to be a son of a 45-year NICU nurse in Boston. So I agree.
I knew that before I asked the question.
Oh, I agree with almost everything that my opponent just said in regards to nurses. We both share a great affinity for nurses. They are definitely the unsung heroes, and day in and day out, they're the real face of healthcare.
Okay, as a follow-up, what needs to be done to make nurses professional lives better?
That's a great question. I do think that there has to be an increased level of pay and protections. Right now, we have dealing with a case inside of our office of an individual nurse who lives in the district, who is part of the union, but was assaulted, chased down an assaulter, and the assaulter tripped, and this person is actually getting reprimanded by their union. And that's something that I think absolutely needs to change, is that right now, with the mental health crisis that we have going on and the opiate epidemic that we have going on top of all of that, a pandemic going on, we really need to have the nurses back now more than ever before. And in doing that through legislation and doing that through higher pay, I think is two ways to do it. But that's just one example of what's going on in the district that we hear from nurses, is that there are these situations that they fall into that they don't believe that they have enough protections from sort of the new things that are happening in society.
Meg, what would you do to improve nurses' professional lives?
Well, I agree with my opponent on a lot of what he said, and I would hope that it wouldn't take 4 years to get all of those protections put into place. But I also want to point out the fact that we're seeing hospitals close around the state, and especially hospitals that have maternity wards. And I think this is a critical concern as well, especially when we look at who's running these hospitals and where the profits are, and how much money is actually behind these operations. And then we look at what we're paying our nurses, and we look at the fact that we're closing hospitals and communities that really need these medical centers. And I just would have to ask, is this really the best we can do? So in addition to putting in protections for nurses against violence in the workplace, I would also want to look at ensuring that our communities have the medical centers that they need.
Thank you both.
Okay. Some of the communities in your district have seen some very emotionally charged moments when it comes to the issue of the American flag with a thin blue line that was displayed in honor of and in support of Weymouth police officer Michael Chesna, killed in the line of duty. What are your thoughts on what the flag means and how the situation unfolded specifically in the town of Hingham? I'm going to start with you, Meg.
Sure. Thank you for that. First, let me just say that I think any officer or first responder who is killed in the line of duty is an incredibly tragic loss. And my heart goes out to their families. And I firmly believe in showing our support for officers and first responders who are lost in the line of duty. Unfortunately, the thin blue line flag has been co-opted. It's been co-opted by racist organizations and white supremacists to mean something else. So while the initial intent of the flag certainly, I believe, was good, it's no longer sending the message that many in our community think it's sending. And I think we have to ask ourselves, in this time of just incredible racial injustice, you know, if it's worth more to stick to a flag than it is to treat our community members who are black with the respect that they're asking for. I think we can honor the lives of fallen police officers and also fight for black lives who are at risk every single day in our communities, despite many people thinking it doesn't happen here. And I think we can do that together as a community and not be divisive.
Same question, Patrick. You'd like me to repeat that?
No, I think that I had it.
Okay.
In regards to Hingham in particular, I think it's really, really sad. Chief Olson is an amazing guy, and a decision that he made has more than likely led him to an early retirement. And going to events with him, really, even when I worked for former Senator Hedlund and seeing him run the DARE program, then from there go on to be involved in the Citizens Police Academy, just an outstanding guy. And as far as the thin blue line flag goes, it was something that they wanted to fly the weeks in honor of Sergeant Chesna, knowing Sergeant Chesna's family, knowing the Hingham firefighters and the situation that Glenn Olson got himself into. I feel really bad for everything that was involved in that. I don't see the reason why they couldn't have been able to fly that as they had the previous years during the week before Sergeant Chesna's memorial of his death.
Well, let me ask you both a follow-up question. And don't be afraid to step on the third rail here. How do you think they handled that situation? I mean, we're hearing requests now from people putting in FOIAs. They're asking about, was there private investigators put on the fire department? Did a member of the Board of Selectmen try to change a police log? I mean, some of the stuff that goes on, it's impossible to get basically an answer from Hingham in general when you're talking to either the Board of Selectmen or the town administrator for a number of stories. Everything is nobody talks. It's very frustrating, and I'll just say that because I've been here, it'll be 30 years this week. We deal with over 28 communities. It's hard to get any information from the town of Hingham. A lot of people felt that that whole situation was not handled well and still isn't being handled well. And, you know, it's not usually, I'm just going to, the little editorial bent here, it's not usually the situation. It's the way it's either stalled about or not handled or denied. And it's very frustrating, I think, to people that live in the towns. What do you think about the way the town of Hingham has handled this? Because a lot of people are not satisfied.
Yeah, and I would say one sort of caveat to this, too, is that, you know, I was at a vigil with Chief Olson just a few weeks before that decision was made, and just a few weeks before, really, the town, the South Shore, and the Commonwealth sort of became divided. And I blame the legislature for drawing that line in the sand and basically saying it's either you're for this or you're for this. And I totally disagree with that sentiment, where I believe that you can say that Black Lives Matter and you can say that you believe that law enforcement should be protected and that there are reforms that can happen. I think that they got caught in the political mess that has been created by the legislature in doing something so rushed, so divisive as law enforcement reform in a way in which we did it, where the vote takes place at 4 o'clock in the morning. Everyone says this has to get done. This has to get done yesterday. And here we are 2 months later after the House and Senate have both passed their bills with no final version of the bill, which really goes to show the real unfortunate circumstance that took place with this entire police reform effort.
Meg, what do you think about the way the town of Hingham handled it?
Well, first of all, I think you can say Black Lives Matter, but unless you actually do something about it, you can't mean it. You know, look, I think I'm not going to sit here and analyze exactly how they handled it. I think it is, I understand how incredibly frustrating it is to not feel as though your government is transparent. And I think that's an issue that definitely needs to be addressed. But what I'm concerned about is that we're spending more time talking about a flag than we are about the 2,998 black lives that live in this district, and that we're using excuses like it was rushed or we didn't have enough time to review it to fail passing legislation, critical legislation that black people need to be safe in their communities. This has been going on for hundreds of years, and these concepts of qualified immunity and banning tear gas, this has been going on conversations for many, many years. So if you need time to catch up, then you're late to the conversation.
Let me just ask you both a follow-up question. When you were putting together your views and opinions on this, how many police officers or chiefs did you speak with, and how many members of the minority community did you speak with, Meg?
So I'm very proud to say that as a member of the Cohasset Advisory Committee, I'm actually the liaison to our public safety, which includes our police department. And I've had some really excellent conversations with police officers in town. I also have police officers in my family, and so I've had conversations with them as well about this. I'm also very proud to say that we've been reached out to by many black members in our community who feel as though they haven't had a voice up to this point, who feel as though performative actions by leaders are continuing to put their lives in jeopardy. And so I'm grateful for every single one of those conversations, and I welcome anyone who wants to talk to me about this to come talk to me. I'm very happy to continue these conversations, and we need to continue them so that we make sure the decisions we make as legislators are the right ones for our entire community.
Patrick, how about you? Who did you speak with? Chiefs, minority members of the community, how many people?
Yeah, extensive conversations. Every single chief in the district, every single one of the unions, minority members in the district, as well as being one of the people indicated by my vote of present and not taking a stand on this issue, was trying to make sure that we could do as much as we could to find common ground. And in that circumstance, it brought me to about 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning, where we were passing around different paper and communicating in these new ways that we communicate to try and actually find that common ground, to work with things such as qualified immunity and due process, and carve out things like the police certification component, which law enforcement and the reform advocates agreed with. And the majority, almost, I would say, almost unanimous amount of the legislature. And what we could have done is we could have done this right. And that's the real issue, is that we didn't do it right. And I think that not doing it right is being shown in full view right now by the stall in the legislature. And if both sides wanted to get something done, it should have been done, especially with the two versions of the bills that they have before them in conference.
I'm just going to ask you both a quick 30-second follow-up, and then we'll move on to Kevin. You know, many people growing up say, I remember when JFK was shot, I remember when he went to the moon, and there are these moments in history that seem to mark a sea change in culture. I'm old enough to remember the difference in culture and the effect that Mothers Against Drunk Drivers had. That was something I saw in my lifetime. Also, Special Olympics. Those were two things that you saw an attitude towards one thing change almost completely, and that's something to be proud of. Do you think what we're going through now, and it's messy when it comes to race relations and how people get along and what the definition is and roles of law enforcement, do you think this is a moment in history right now? 30 seconds.
I do. I think that we will get closer to true equality under the law, which is exactly what we've been striving for and what we need. And I think on the other side, we will, on the police reform side, I think that we will get to something that is meaningful and that actually matters, but that both sides can get behind, and we can unite as a commonwealth, as we usually do on issues of importance, especially of this significance. We can unite on this issue and continue to move forward as a society and as a commonwealth.
Meg, your thoughts, same question.
I absolutely do think it's a moment in history, but I think it's a moment that we're going to squander if we don't stay awake. I think we've already seen the interest level in Black Lives Matter decrease significantly. And frankly, I think with the recent passing of Justice Ginsburg, our rights for equality are really at risk here of being taken away from us. And for many people, they've never had those rights, even if the law provides for them to. And so I think we really need to stay awake. We need to keep talking about this. And this is why I will continue to have these hard conversations, because they really are critically important.
Okay, thank you. Let's go to Kevin Tachi. Questions for the candidates.
Talking about the pandemic, we'll start with you, Senator. How has the pandemic affected your district, and what were you able to do, at least assist your constituents and businesses in need during the pandemic?
Thank you for that question. We immediately got to work in my office. The State House is typically a revolving door, but three out of my four staffers have been there since the entirety of my term. And we were able to get to work and make sure that people had the tools that they needed to navigate through the unemployment process, that we were able to get people the resources financially that they needed during that period of time. That was one of the most important moments of my 4 years in the legislature, and it reminded me back to when I worked for Bob Hedlund and we were dealing with the mortgage and financial banking crisis of 2008 and 2009. In addition to that, being able to work with every single chamber of commerce, do Zooms, do everything we possibly could to help hundreds of businesses here in the South Shore secure money through the Payroll Protection Program. And on top of that, getting as much PPE as we possibly could. There was a period of time for about 2.5 months where daily we were on conference calls with leaders throughout the state, leaders in the federal delegation, as well as our governor, trying to make sure and emphasize that the South Shore be taken care of during this pandemic. And I think we've done a really good job in making sure that that's been done to date. But we do need a continuation of federal partnership to make sure that we go to the next step and get this done.
Thank you.
Folks have been critical of the governor and his administration as to how they handled the pandemic, especially the reopening of phases. If you were to rate the governor, how would you rate him and his performance during COVID-19?
There are some things we disagree with, but I don't think you could ask for a better pandemic manager on the fly than Charlie Baker. You have somebody who has the experience in healthcare. You have somebody who has a breadth of knowledge in almost every single subject matter and who built a team around him that was ready to play big and play hard at this period of time. And the people of Massachusetts can disagree on some issues, and I disagree with them on some issues. The flu mandate, maybe the reopening wasn't quick enough, but he was able to give access to the reopening advisory board that we were then able to communicate with and make sure that our businesses were taken care of. Everyone was stressed. The level of uncertainty and challenges that people faced were heightened much more than they could ever have imagined. And I think that he was a steady hand that led us to continue to be where we are. And the most important thing right now is the public health metrics and the direction they're going. And I think that we see the fruits of our labor and our governor's labor by the results that we see on the COVID dashboard on a day in and day out.
Meg, my question to you, what's your understanding as to how the pandemic affected your district? And to your knowledge, the assistance that was offered, was it enough?
So I'm grateful for the question, especially as a small business owner, because I personally have felt the effects of this pandemic. And I'm grateful to Senator O'Connor for helping so many businesses in our district get the assistance they need. What concerns me is that there were still so many others who were left behind, especially businesses like mine. I run a mostly online business that maybe don't fall into the traditional model. I've talked to many people in the district who couldn't access the Payroll Protection Program funds. They couldn't access the EIDL funds. They were struggling to get unemployment. These are people who are at risk of losing their homes, of not being able to afford food, and of struggling to juggle what work they were trying to do to keep their businesses afloat with the fact that childcare and schools had completely shut down. So, you know, I think this was an unprecedented pandemic, certainly, and there were some good things that were done. But at the end of the day, I think not enough was done, especially for the people in our district who are paid minimum wage, who have to go to work, or they do not get a paycheck and they cannot pay their bills. For too many people, the financial assistance came too late, and it just wasn't enough.
Follow-up question, same one I asked Patrick. How would you rate the governor and his administration, their handling of the pandemic, especially the phased reopening of the state?
So I think the governor has done some good things with dealing with the pandemic. And I think when you look at what other governors around the country are doing, we can certainly be grateful for the fact that he did take it very seriously from the beginning. However, from the beginning, I have been saying that I don't think he acted strongly enough. And I know that this is difficult because people want their businesses to be reopened. People want their lives to go back to normal. But unfortunately, I don't think we'd be here and still be in this if we hadn't acted more swiftly. I also think that the governor is not recognizing the fact that cases are increasing right now and people are getting sick, and yet we're reopening restaurants, we're reopening bars at restaurants, we're adding more people to our tables. I think that's a concern. And lastly, I would say when I talk to a lot of teachers and schools and I talk to parents and I talk to small business owners, they feel as though the lack of communication has been a huge issue for them, left wondering how to handle the reopening process and what that means for their business.
Just want to remind people, you're listening to a WATD political forum. It's the race for the Plymouth Norfolk State Senate seat. We've got the incumbent here, Patrick O'Connor. We've got his challenger, and that's Meg Wheeler. We're going to take a quick break for a commercial. That's brought to you by our sponsor, Stewart Painting, encouraging you this fall to take pride in your vote and in your home. Visit stewartpaint.com for special home repair and painting offers and to schedule a free estimate. We'll be back right after this.
It seems like political season never ends, just like taking care of your home. Hi, I'm Sheldon Stewart of Stewart Painting in Hingham. Taking the first step in voting can be very similar to taking the first step in painting and repairing your home. Neither should wait. Take pride in your vote and your home. Visit our website at stuartpaint.com to learn more about our services, or stop by our Hingham office at 15 Levitt Street. Stuart Painting. Expect the best.
WATD's Political Forum continues. Now, back to Studio B. Here's your moderator, Christine James.
And thank you. We are back here in Studio B in the middle of this very exciting, not going to say debate. We call them forums because we don't like to go with a specific debate format. We like to use a forum, which is more of a conversation. We can go back and forth. And we were in the middle of asking questions, and I believe, Charles Mathewson, it was your turn to ask the candidates questions.
Why, I think it is, Christine.
Okay. Go for it.
Let's go local. The compressor station in Weymouth is there to compress pipeline gas to move along to Canada. It has no effect on the district that it's in other than to pollute the air. In fact, I think I saw you out there at least once, Patrick, when Senator Markey was here. It's going ahead. I mean, despite all the protests, it's going ahead. So, Patrick, what could you have done more to stop it?
Honestly, I think that the cat is out of the bag once FERC approves it. It approved it in 2016 under the Obama administration, and I think that was our real opportunity to shine a light. FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. I'm proud to have stood up and taken a vote against that as a member of the City Council, and then in 2016, and continue to work for the past 4 years. At one point in time, getting the majority of my colleagues in the Massachusetts State Senate to author a letter with me to oppose the air quality permit. We went to court. I am one of the 10 people that have signed front of a docket to bring this to U.S. court, and we have continuously worked every single angle that we possibly could to try and push back on this project. But I truly believe it's a David versus Goliath situation once the federal government approves this. And it was good to have Senator Markey and Senator Warren eventually join the fight and try and take this. But I thought that the end of this should have been a day in court for the town of Weymouth against the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission and get this done and get our final say.
Same question to you. What would you have done
differently? Well, look, I think this is a huge environmental justice issue. I think this compressor station, the illegal compressor station, was placed in an area that it never should have been placed. While I think it's great to say we've done all this work, but now we're going to throw our hands up, there are still 3,000 children who are within, stone's throw of this compressor station. There are still families all over our district who are at risk of suffering from this compressor station. And so for me, the fight isn't over. I think, number one, we need to codify environmental justice into Massachusetts law. That has not happened yet. Number two, I think we need to look at ways to disincentivize the compressor station from even operating in this state. But I think the third piece, which is really the key piece, and I was pleased to talk to Senator Markey about this just last week, is actually pushing forward for a Green New Deal. We need to have a renewed focus on getting rid of fracked gas. This type of operation should never exist in this state to begin with, and it's not what's going to save us from the impending climate crisis.
As a follow-up, you've mentioned, Meg, a couple of things to do. Is it over? Is there another chance?
I think the compressor station is obviously going to start operations. But again, I think you can look at how do we get creative. So, okay, they're going to start. Well, can we look at different tax opportunities to make this so expensive to operate that they don't want to be here anymore? Can we look at other regulations that we can put into place to essentially drive them out of town? I've never met a problem where I've said, you know what, it seems really hard, so I'm going to throw my hands up and say, forget it. People's lives are on the line here, and it's just not good enough to me to say, well, there's nothing more we can do, so I guess we'll move on to the next thing.
Patrick?
Well, I don't think that I've ever said there's nothing more to do. Let's move on to the next thing. As a matter of fact, we just wrote letters to the Attorney General as well as the Executive Office of Energy just last week. This has been something that I've fought for 4 years, and this has been something that has been a debate issue that I have debated in these forums four times or five times against various different opponents who, towards the tail end during the campaign season, get involved in this issue. This has been something I'm proud to have played a leadership role in, to be to be able to continue to work on this project, as my opponent said, to try and tax them. We have a bill that we filed, for the past two legislative sessions to tax their utility, not as an underground utility, but as an above-ground utility. We have put forward legislation. We have passed legislation in the Massachusetts State Senate to restrict the siting of compressor stations within 1,000 feet of school parks, playgrounds, recreational facilities, churches, and neighborhoods. We've done that. So we've passed this stuff that's gone to conference committee, that's been able to be conferenceable, but we don't have the commitment and support right now from the House of Representatives on the other end to get that legislation done. So I would say don't look this way to try and say you're putting your hands up and giving up. We've been at this for 4 years, and we'll continue.
Thank you.
Isn't the compressor stations going online on Friday? Isn't it October 1st? I think it's going to be an interesting day. One of my favorite topics here, of course, bacon, bringing home the bacon to the district. And I did have one state rep who ran before who actually brought me a package of bacon here. By the way, I'm not going to mention that person, but they did win, and the bacon was good. Patrick, you've been in the district as a state senator. Tell me some of the bacon you've brought to the district.
Sure. Well, we've record local aid every single year for each one of the communities for education, for infrastructure, for public safety. We've secured money for organizations like Alice's House. We've secured money for organizations like the TIC, which has been gracious enough to host us here today. We've secured money for the Veterans Home down the street in Marshfield, another one in Weymouth. We have secured financial resources, as my opponent said earlier, too, Black Lives Matter, and do something to actually mean it. We secured money for Camp Wing, for Crossroads, which I was proud to be their legislator of the year in 2019, which gives inner city kids from Boston and Brockton and some of kids in Weymouth an opportunity at a summer camp. We've been able to secure a significant amount of money, over $450 million in total, to build schools, to build two new libraries, one that just opened yesterday in Weymouth, Tufts Library, another one in Norwell to be opening soon, the Chapman Middle School in Weymouth. These are the things you do when you're able to cooperate, to work in a bipartisan way, and to work across the aisle to secure resources, because first and foremost, the most important thing is bringing taxpayers' dollars back to the district.
Meg, if you win this seat, what would your goal be? What kind of bacon would you be bringing home to the district? And it can be vegan bacon if you'd prefer that.
Thank you for that. Okay. Well, look, I commend Senator O'Connor on the money that he's brought back to the district. I think that's part of the job of state senator, and I'm glad to hear that he's been doing that. I'll continue that when I'm in the state senate. But I think we still have issues in this district that are being unaddressed. You know, we have school buildings that are outdated. We don't have free full-day kindergarten in 5 of the 8 towns in this district. We have people, who are still struggling to pay their bills. We have affordable housing issues. There's more we have to do. And so I look forward to, being a part of the Democratic caucus and having a voice in that caucus and really being able to work to bring it back. I also want to highlight the fact that I do have extensive financial experience. You know, I'm a CPA. I have a lot of experience in budgeting and taxation. And so I think that'll really give me an edge when I'm in the state Senate, because I understand this stuff. And so for me, it'll be very easy to go in there, especially in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic, and really help bring our economy back.
Thank you. Let's go to Kevin Tachi now. Questions for the candidates.
Whether you know it as Southfield or Union Point, the former Naval Air Station has yet another master developer. Brookfield, I guess, is going to attempt to manage the section of land that is situated between Weymouth, Rockland, and Abington. What are your concerns for the further development and long-term management of that parcel of land? Meg.
Well, I think anytime we're bringing development into our communities, we need to be thinking about both the short-term and the long-term impacts to those communities. So I have a few concerns. Number one, are certainly related to the climate and ensuring that we are preserving our communities and that we're building in a way that is mitigating the climate crisis and not exacerbating it. The second is that we're actually bringing in affordable housing. I think that's a crucial issue here on the South Shore. It's one that many of our communities are trying to solve, currently, but it's one we still have a lot of work to do. We're a district that is still, 94% white. We lack diversity because of the fact that we do not create affordable housing opportunities for people to come here. So with any development that I'm looking at, that's really what I'm thinking about, is this actually going to better our communities long term?
Is there any hope as to, if you got Brookfield coming in, that they may look to do something differently with the portion of your district that it represents?
I candidly don't know enough about Brookfield to speak to that. But I think what's important in any of these conversations is that we make sure there is conversation about this. We make sure that we involve our city councilors, we involve our legislators, and we involve our community members. And, you know, I know that that's one of the things that a lot of our community members feel has been missing is their voices from these conversations. You know, we're going through, I know we're not as big, but we're going through our own development woes in Cohasset. And that's been a big conversation for us as well, is how do we do this in a way that is beneficial to our communities, but also ensures that the people in our communities have a voice in the conversation.
Same question, Senator. What's your concerns? We got yet another master developer. What are your concerns about further development and long-term management of the Naval Air Station?
Sure. This is an issue that I've spent a lot of time on. It's the largest development in the district, one of the largest developments in Northeast United States. Brookfield seems to be a very reputable development corporation. The biggest issue by far, and I understand some of the issues that my opponent raised, but it's water and sewer, as it has been for quite some time, and as it is in the district as a whole, in South Hingham, in Cohasset, Hull, Scituate. But specifically there, you know, right now, the water that they get is from the town of Weymouth, and they need their own independent water source, and then at that point in time, they need to get sewer. We've been trying with MWRA, but with the flow and the capacity that they're at, that's not looking like an option. And I think that the secondary issue that they're going to have to do is put this piece of land puzzle back together again. There are some pieces that are still owned by the Navy. There are some pieces that are still owned by LSTAR. There are some pieces that are still owned by South Shore Tri-Town, now the Southfield Redevelopment Authority. All that has to be put back together, re-envisioned, but I'm very hopeful for the future.
Any concern that there could be a reshuffling of what they may do with that parcel land that's in your district?
Yeah, I mean, the last developer, LSTAR, reshuffled it into, you know, the sort of city of the future mentality, and that didn't work, and the numbers didn't work with that. So I think that what the next project is going to have to be is a reflection of what the state needs. You know, serving on the South Shore Chamber of Commerce Housing Committee, knowing that we need, you know, 40,000 plus housing units in the next 30 years in the 25 communities that make up the South Shore Chamber of Commerce's region, there's a lot that needs to be done. And that area is a golden opportunity, not just for the South Shore, but for Weymouth in particular, because Weymouth is a primarily residential-based tax base. And to be able to unlock that commercial base there will be a generational opportunity for the largest town in this district. And I also think, in turn, will create good-paying permanent jobs for people here on the South Shore and create better, more equitable access to healthcare sites.
Okay. Charles Mathewson, questions for the candidates?
Kids, I've spent most of the summer driving between Plymouth and Boston, and it's really bad. This district is odd in that the main thoroughfare is north and south, and it's a north-south district along the coast, our Route 3A and Route 53. And depending on the time of day, even they are bad if you try to get off of Route 3. What would you do with to solve the traffic woes in these coastal towns, plus, of course, Cohasset without a beach? Norwell. Patrick.
I mean, right now, where we are making those investments that we need, 3A just is recently going to go through an investment up to Henry Turner Bailey Road in Scituate. We secured $75 million in a bond for road and safety improvements on 3A. And on 228, we recently had the bridge work that was done on the bridges on Route 3. Obviously, there's more that we need to do, but I think right now our focus should be at the recent MBTA, Fiscal Management Control Board's meeting, as far as what their future is going to look like with a potential $500 and $600 million cut in the MBTA budget. And one of the things that was brought up by one of the executives of the Fiscal Management Control Board was the potential of a reduction in ferry service because of the Greenbush line, and then the potential of reduction in the Greenbush line as well. So what we need to do is continue to advocate for more public transportation funding down here on the South Shore. We've seen a great job being done on the Red Line, on the Orange Line, on the Green Line, different extensions on commuter rails and on the Red Line, on the Green Line, but we need to see that money come down here in transportation funds through the South Shore, which we are slowly seeing.
Meg Wheeler, what would you do about transportation?
Sure. Well, I actually agree with my opponent on this, that we need to put more into public transportation. I think we have an opportunity here. I don't think we can just look at transportation in a bubble. And when we think about our climate crisis that we're dealing with right now, there's a real opportunity here to kind of transition people's behavior and really focus on improving our public transportation system so that it's something that is reliable, it's affordable, it's accessible to every single one in the district. I also just want to add that, you know, out of this pandemic that we're still living through, I think we're seeing a shifting in behavior when it comes to working as well. And so I think we need to do more to support companies to transition their workforce to perhaps not be in the office every single day, supporting people who want to start their own businesses, because all of that ultimately can cut down on traffic if we're not commuting into the city every single day. So I think this is really an opportunity here for us to reshift our behavior and really focus on not just solving the transportation issue, but also saving our planet.
Thank you.
Just a reminder, you're listening to a political forum here. It's the Plymouth Norfolk State Senate seat. You've got the incumbent Republican Pat O'Connor here, and you have the Democrat, the challenger Meg Wheeler, and of course the folks at Marshfield Community Television. If you had to describe yourself, what kind of a Democrat would you say you are, Meg?
I don't know what kind of Democrats there are. I don't think of myself in that term. I think of myself as someone who believes in investing in people and fighting for people. And for far too long, our society has been really unequal for a lot of people. It's left women behind. It's left people of color behind. It's left people in our disabled communities behind. And so when I think about what kind of Democrat or what kind of elected official I am or would be, I really think about being someone who wants to use policy as a way to really solve the inequality issue that we have in our country. We can do this through housing. We can do this, you know, last week I just introduced my universal child care plan, which is not just critical for young families, but actually puts billions of dollars back into our economy. And so for me, it really all comes down to how do we invest in our people?
Okay. Patrick, what kind of a Republican are you?
I say I'm a New England Republican, a traditional sort of Rockefeller Republican. I focus more on results than rhetoric and people more than party. And I think that that's what has really been able to provide a reputation up on Beacon Hill that has landed me in some of these posts of leadership, both in, you know, in ways and means, especially this year as the new ranking member taking over from Vinny, who we dearly miss up in the state Senate. But I would say that I'm a person that sees an issue as an issue and wants to provide solutions to problems. And that's what I think we're lacking down in D.C., where you see the chaos that goes on down there on a day-to-day basis. I was very pleased to see 25 Democrats and Republicans come together to put forward a stimulus package a few weeks ago. That's the type of politics that people want. That's the type of brand of politics that I subscribe to. And what's happening now is not what made me fall in love with public service. What made me fall in love with public service was being able to work together and collaborate, find common ground and get things done and make a healthier and happier place for people to live.
Okay, thank you. Kevin Tachi, question for the candidates.
I'll start with you, Meg. Let's talk about the wave of change. You're running against an incumbent, which is always a tough task. However, the past couple of elections, we have seen a growing number of South Shore women win seats in the legislature. Yes. What do you think that is?
Well, I think it's because people in our communities realize that in order to actually have the equality that I've been talking about, we need to have diverse perspectives. And that means having more women in office. It means having more mothers in office. It means having more people of color in office. You know, running for office against an incumbent is always going to be a hard thing until we fix what's broken with our political system. You know, having public funding for campaigns, having full transparency in campaigns, I think these are important things that we need to focus on. But we also need to focus on really enabling the voices of women and people of color in our communities. It's one of the reasons why I actually run my own podcast, Elected Podcast, which is all about our journey running for office so that other women can see what we're doing. It's going to drastically improve our communities when we have more women represented in office. And I'm very excited for that day. But until then, we're just going to keep trying and we're going to keep having these important conversations because that is the only way we ensure that we're not stuck with the status quo.
You're the incumbent, Patrick. And again, wave of change. We're seeing a lot of women being successful. how do you resonate not only with women, but everybody in your district, and make sure that you will get another two years in office?
Yeah, I think that we have 4 years to look back on as far as who I am as a person, who I am as a legislator. I think one of the most important things that people don't realize is when they call their state senator's office, if there's somebody at the other end of the line that is going to listen to them and going to help them provide a solution to their problem. And that's what we've done. That's what I grew up with as, you know, working in the legislature and trying to answer those calls in 08 and 09 when people were losing their homes. And now seeing that again, where everyone in our office was working 8 o'clock in the morning to 8, 9 o'clock at night, trying to solve people's unemployment problems, trying to keep people's jobs, trying to make sure businesses were open, trying to get hospitals personal protective equipment, trying to make sure that we did as much as we possibly could during this period of time. So I don't think that it's necessarily a gender issue. I think that this is an issue of there's a level of experience and knowledge that plays a huge role in this position in making sure you deliver for the district and you provide people with the representation that they expect and deserve on Beacon Hill.
Charles Mathewson, questions for the candidates?
This is a coastal district. What do you think needs to be done in terms of climate change? Do you think climate change exists, Patrick?
Of course, climate change exists. Charlie, thank you for the question. I was proud that 2.5 years ago, Governor Baker chose Scituate as the place to announce the most comprehensive investment in climate change resiliency efforts in the history of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And I was even prouder that he asked me to speak that day and to introduce this piece of legislation and talk to it. This is something that we have played a big role on. I'm proud to be endorsed by the Environmental League of Massachusetts, which is the largest environmental policy group here in Massachusetts. And the reason why is because I work across the aisle, I'm able to get things done, and we have secured tens of millions of dollars for coastal infrastructure projects. There's still more that needs to be done. You see the erosion that's going on. It's really sad when you look at our coastline here on the South Shore. But we're moving as fast as we possibly can to try and put forward plans to get to a renewable energy future as quickly as we can, whether that be in 2040, 2045, and 2050. And we need to monitor that progress to make sure we get to where we need to get to and we get there appropriately.
Meg Wheeler, what would you do about climate change if you were elected?
Thank you for that question. So I absolutely think this is an issue. And as my opponent has pointed out, this is an issue that our district faces every single day. As I've said before, I'm a supporter of the Green New Deal and bringing that to Massachusetts. I think we have an opportunity here not to just address the climate crisis, but also to create good, stable, green jobs in our community, which is really important in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic. We have an opportunity to revitalize our transportation system, which, as we've previously discussed, is critical to our district. I'm fully committed to 100% renewable energy by 2045. I'm committed to rolling out this Green Jobs program, which is necessary, I believe, to bring our economy to where we need it to be. And I look forward to doing that work in the State Senate and continuing the work that my opponent has done, but really to taking a more aggressive approach to it, because we don't have time to wait on this. Time is truly running out, and our planet is dying as a result of it.
What about... Thank you, Joe Rossi.
Joe Flood.
Flooding. If you look at projections of Marshfield, you know, its emphasis on marsh. Are we doing enough specifically for flooding in this district?
I think that we can always do more. A lot of this comes down to how expensive the improvement projects that need to take place costs. When you look at Brant Rock, for example, I go down there. My uncle has a home in Green Harbor in Hummerock, another example, where you see this flooding take place, and there has to be better infrastructure to alleviate some of those flooded areas. And when you talk about the homeowners that face flood insurance, I think that there's been a real good amount of work done by Joe Rossi. I know that this is Flood Insurance Awareness Month. We're coming to the tail end of it. But that's the emphasis that we're putting on this, is that this is something that came to us as a charge from the federal government, and we need to do as much as we possibly can, which we've already have, to push back on some of the requirements that we were then able to fix for some families that were getting unfairly assessed for flood insurance. And yeah, no, I think there can be more that can be done from the state level to provide financial resources down to communities to give them the ability to help out help out their neighbors as well as infrastructure.
Guil, what about flooding?
Well, I think we're going to come to agreement on this one as well, that there is more that we can do. I think as my opponent pointed out, there really are two aspects to this. One is really working with the requirements for flood insurance, which, you know, I've personally faced and are just incredibly debilitating for a working family. But I also do think it is about bringing more money into the district to support homeowners whose homes are at risk and our communities that are at risk. You know, and that's really making sure that we have someone who's up there willing to fight for those funds. They are necessary. Our communities need them, and we absolutely can be doing more.
Thank you.
We're going to go to our lightning round now. Again, the term here is lightning, quick, like a bunny, like lightning. It's either yes or no for an answer, or one or two sentences tops. Kevin Tachi, would you like to begin with that big smile on your face?
Like a bunny, yes.
No pressure.
One thing that you'll stock up on for the next COVID-19 wave, and it's coming.
Patrick.
Hand sanitizer.
Okay. Meg.
iPad games for my son.
Okay. Charles.
Where in the district from, let's say, Squantum to Grays Beach is your favorite place to hang out?
Meg.
You know what? I love Sandy Beach in my hometown of Cohasset.
At Webb State Park.
Okay. Wouldn't be a forum unless I asked county government, stay or go, Patrick O'Connor.
Well, there are two counties here.
There are.
There are. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But I think
no
she
pressure.
Means...
It's just Plymouth County here we're talking about. Stay or go?
Stay.
Stay.
Okay. Had to ask it.
Who serves the best pizza in your Senate district? Pick one.
Who's going
who's
first?
Oh, my gosh. Peel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Peel's good. I'm going to say Denley's, and I do love Poopsies. Shout out to Poopsies, okay. But just outside.
Quick. And one more question there, Charles.
What's your favorite bad habit? It has to be your habit. It has to be bad. And it can't be, I work too hard.
Okay. Patrick.
I'm always chasing sleep. Always.
Okay.
Huh. I make myself two s'mores every night for dessert.
Wow. Last night we had whiskey and pizza.
Okay, one more quick one.
We didn't have whiskey and pizza. Those were the answers.
That was before the forum. Ranked choice voting. Yes or no, Patrick?
No, right now.
Okay. Ranked choice voting.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Let's go to final statements here. We're going to change the order. We began with Patrick, and then we went to Meg. So we're going to begin with Meg, and then we're going to go to Patrick. And remember, final comments, just 1 minute.
Great. Thank you so much. And thank you again for the opportunity to have this important conversation. State government has never been more important. As we're seeing our rights eroded at the national level, it's up to state and local leaders to be the front line against dysfunction, corruption, and injustice, from ensuring women have the right to choose to protecting our environment and making sure our economy works for everyone and not just some. We need bold action, and we need it now. In the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic, our state revenues are plummeting, and many people are going without jobs, without food, and without the funds they need to make their next housing payment. But the pandemic didn't create this economic crisis. It simply exacerbated it. For too long, workers have been denied livable wages, families have struggled to afford rising childcare, our public schools have been grossly underfunded, and too many residents still don't have access to the health care they need. Right now, this district has a state senator who has let us down because he refused to use his position to advocate for bold change. We have a senator who has failed to support reproductive justice, racial justice, and economic justice. We deserve better. This is the time for bold, meaningful action. With my financial background, my experience as a small business owner, and my platform in investing in people, I will be the leader you deserve. This is why I'm asking for your vote on or before November 3rd.
Thank you very much. That was the closing statement from Meg Guil. Closing statement now for Patrick O'Connor.
Thank you. Thank you to WATD. Thank you to my opponent, Christine, Kevin, Charlie. Thank you. Public service is something that I believe in, and it's something that every single member of my staff believes in. I've built a team that cares deeply about this district and delivers results day in and day out. I'm proud to have played one of the most significant roles in the biggest economic, social, and racial justice issue that we have had before the legislature in the Student Opportunity Act. When COVID-19 hit, I was so proud of the work we did to help hundreds of people navigate unemployment, to secure PPE for our frontline healthcare workers and our senior citizens, to keep businesses afloat, and to help so many people when they faced the unexpected. My team and I give this district 110% every single day. There's going to be some tough times ahead, and we may disagree from time to time. But know that you have a state senator that cares deeply and stands up each and every day to make sure you, your family, and our communities thrive. and that Massachusetts remains the best place to live, work, and raise a family. I respectfully ask for your vote.
Thank you very much. That was Patrick O'Connor with his closing statement. Remember, the election is November 3rd, and we will provide complete coverage here on WATD on election night. I'm Christine James, your moderator. I was joined tonight by Monday Night Talk host Kevin Tachi, reporter Charles Mathewson, timing by Amy Leonard, Larry Nelson Engineering, and, of course, Marshfield Community Television. This entire forum will be up online on the WATD website, 959WATD.com. Selected cuts will run tomorrow morning during Morning Drive. Remember, if you don't vote, you don't have a voice. I'm Christine James. Thank you so much for watching.